Here we go, part two, Saturday, and our topic is, I gotta tell you what it is. Is healing is a way of life. That's a good topic, isn't it? Healing is a way of life. Now, I said before the pause that we were going to speak about some very wonderful positive treatments on healing. Some very wonderful ways of doing it. Now, the best positive ways of doing it and the treatment are things that you can equate to. I noticed there are pads of paper and pencils there put out by a very illustrious, industrious organization for your benefit. So, make use of them. The impossible works. And we should always seek to accomplish the impossible because it works. The impossible is something that we do every day. Now, I'm going to tell a story which I told to the group just before we came in from outdoors there about Lorenzo. Ellen is a mother. She has a daughter and a son. Her daughter has five children. Her son has one. Her daughter, at the age of 12, I believe it was, fell in love with a boy, and he fell in love with her. And when they were 25, they got married, something like that. And but all this time, they knew who they wanted. And the girl dedicated herself to becoming the most exquisite wife that a person could ever be, the most exquisite mother of children, because she wanted children, as you could ever be, and the most exquisite lover you could ever be, right from the French factory. She ordered these books from France which taught how to be the most marvelous lover that the world has ever known. And she did it. She and her husband are two of the most devoted, loving people to one another. They're happy with each other. They're content with each other. They are fantastic. And they have five beautiful children who are equally fantastic. Now, enough of the love story. Now let's go on to the other story. And here is the other side of the news. So, she has a son. He's a nice guy, Diego. And when Ellen and her husband were no longer together, it was a tough thing for him. And he thought his father had deserted him and his mother had deserted him because she took over the corporation in America and stuff like that. And he just was, you know, just down. And so a girl that he knew as he was growing up was a good possibility, so he married her. And they lived together harmoniously for many years. They have a son, Giacomo, who is 8 now, and she is head of the Lugano Tax Bureau, a very competent, capable, fantastic woman, you know, with her hair tight behind her head and wearing very severe clothing. She is a very competent businesswoman. And he was a banker. His father was a business consultant, and of course, being a banker was the next step. So, and a very good banker. He was known throughout Lugano as an equality banker, and he was moved up to the position of vice president in the bank. Of course, vice presidents in banks are quite common, but right away, he was moved up because he was good. Well, then he felt empty in his life. He didn't know why. So he said to his wife, "I want to separate." And she says, "What? You know, we have a wonderful life, we have a wonderful marriage. You're doing everything I want you to do, you know." And he would make the meals and he would do these things, and he's a good guy in every possible way. But he just woke up, he says, "I'm not really happy." And so he wanted to separate. And so his wife and he had, because Ellen had abandoned him, he felt, were never invited into his home much to be there for dinner. And so we called his wife, Lorenzo, and said, invite us for dinner. You know, we're like them. And so she did. So we went to her house and had dinner in Lugano, and she speaks perfect Italian and virtually no English. And I speak perfect English and Il sono Dio. I am God in Italian. I only know the important things, you know. And so I said, Ellen, when we go visit, you say everything I say to her. And don't be a mother-in-law. Don't correct me. If I say, damn it, say damn it. You know, if I say hell, you know, just say what I say. And she said, all right. She's used to that because I sometimes use phrases to get points across that are difficult for her sensitive ears. So we went to see Lorenzo in her very lovely home. They just remodeled it for about $1 million and made a lovely place there. So we went in, and as we went in, she was in the kitchen making a salad for us, very lovely. And she was crying. Maybe a river of tears, as the saying goes. You know, she was very unhappy. And so, what did I do? What did I do? I grabbed her in my arms, and I said, Lorenza, you're wonderful. I love you. You're wonderful. You're wonderful. And I had Ellen say it, and she looked at me. And I hugged her. I said, Lorenza, you are the creator of your world. You are da-da-da-da-da-da. And I gave her the whole idea of being positive about herself, being the creator of her world, and everything that she wants. But, no, no. Nothing is impossible. Nothing is impossible. You put the cause in motion of what it is you want to experience, and you'll experience it. You put the cause in motion of what you want to experience, and you'll experience it. You put the cause of what you want to experience in motion, and you'll experience it. And so, she had never spoken to me before. She never even looked at me. I'm just the associate of her mother-in-law, you know. And I am in America, and I drew her away from Italy and from Switzerland and from Lugano to America. I was a terrible person. And so now here I am hugging her and loving her and talking to her. We had a nice dinner together and a nice time together. When we went home, she called once, twice, sometimes three times a day. And she always included, tell her thank you, tell her thank you, tell her I'm so happy that, you know, I'm loved, I'm cared about, and so forth. Well, the first thing she did was what?
First thing she did.
I told you what she did. The first thing she did was, yes?
She changed. Hmm?
She changed herself to what she wanted to do. She had her hair done. She was a brunette. She changed it to blonde. She didn't like that. So then she changed it to redhead. You know? And she's gorgeous. Tall, slim, beautiful girl. Then she got these proper dresses that showed off her figure. And the skirt's just the right length to be tantalizing, you know. And then she bought these shoes with 10-inch high heels on them, you know, that sort of stuff. And she walks into her office dressed like this here. And, man, you know, look at the boss. Look at her, you know. But no one dared be uncouth or unkind because she's in charge of herself. And then we said, let go, relax. There are hundreds of men out there who would just love to be a friend of yours. Hundreds of men out there that would just love to have you in their arms and say hi to it. She said, oh, I have lots of friends. That's fine. That's fine. Let go of your husband. Let him go. Release him to his highest good and you to your highest good. All is in divine order now. And so, what happened? The husband became an exquisite banker, even more, and he got his own apartment. And he has a room in the apartment for his son, so his son can come and visit him three times a week or something. What does he do? A few times a week or whatever. And when his son is there, he takes time with him. He has quality time. For the first time in his life, instead of watching television, reading the newspaper, and acting like a normal father, he takes time with his son because he wants his son to like him. And he really likes his son, but he just never had a chance to know him. So this father, who was an old stick-in-the-mud banker, went to dancing school, ta-ta-ta, learning how to do the modern current dances. And so his son is now coming to visit him, and so he takes his son to the dancing lessons, 8-year-old, you know. What a lucky kid. My goodness sakes. And the boy says, okay, you know. Dad, you look silly, but I like it. But, you know, it's wonderful. And the father and son are now having a relationship they would have never had. How glorious. And the mother wants to show the son that she loves him, and she's taking time to be with him too. Who's the winner here? Ooh, all three. Now, the mother is having a great relationship with the son. She's not saying the father is this bad and other. Just, hey, your dad wants to do what he wants to do. Sometimes we make changes. Sometimes we do these things. She had a party, a big party. And at the party, she was going to let out her anger. And Ellen and I knew about it. And so we just said, all is in divine order. You are saying everything that is for your highest good. Not she shouldn't say things. Who cares? That's their business. But all is in divine order for your highest good. Here she is, a mother, facing this difficulty with her son, which, as most mothers would say, my son's getting divorced. Oh. You say that's the most common thing in the world. You know, 50% of the marriages experience that. Well, it doesn't matter. When it's yours, it touches you. It gets right to your heart. And it gets right to your soul and gets right to you and says, where have I gone wrong as a mother? And I could tell her, but there's no sense in doing that. The point is, where she went wrong was that instead of raising her son as a normal son, she should have realized what he was, and she didn't realize what he was. He was a genius. He was a fantastic being. He was the most magnificent young man ever to walk upon the face of the earth. And she knew a little bit of that, but not enough. She came to my seminars in Lugano, and she heard that for the first time. And so what does she do? She runs up, oh, what a beautiful little boy you have. He's a genius. What a beautiful little girl you have. She's a genius. And, you know, telling everybody else. But did she tell her son that? Well, one day she did. His teacher called him and his parents to come in school and said, your son's having a little difficulty in school. And she says, my genius son's having difficulty in school? And the teacher said, I'd like to talk to your husband. And so the father went in there, and the teacher says, I'm having difficulty with your son. My genius son? You know? And the teacher says, I better look at this kid with a different set of eyes. I better look at this kid with a different set of expectations. And he did. And the kid graduated tops. You see, it's our expectation. The kid wasn't bad. The kid just didn't have the right image of himself. And like this, the image happens. Okay. So now, what's happening to this kid? This is an ongoing story. What's happening to this kid is he is waking up to being a glorious father. If this comes out of this, what a beautiful experience. And it does come out of it. The mother, she still calls once or twice a week and tells Ellen, give Herb my love. Give Herb a big hug for me. Tell Herb how much I appreciate what he did, you know.
He gives the hug to you and to me, the greetings.
You see what I mean? I get the hug and she gets the greetings. Well, that's because she speaks Italian. You see, if she didn't speak Italian, she'd have to talk through hugs too. Which she does very well. Okay, but this is a demonstration. This is a demonstration in her life. She went to one of our seminars, and in the seminars, one of the first ones, and we said, I am God, God I am, and everyone is God, and all is God. And so then she comes out of the seminar, and the first man she sees sitting at the restaurant table there, she jumps in his lap and says, I'm God, and you're God. Did you know that? And he says, a lady, please, you know. And so we got her off of his lap. And then he said to us, he said, my wife's in that seminar too. And he says, I know I'm God, but I don't really talk about it, you know. But you see, and then she said to her husband, she says, Elias, I'm God, and you're God. Elias says, oh, you finally found out. You know, the gentle subtlety of it all. But this is how and what happens when you begin to speak the principle, live the principle. She was flamboyant about it, you know. She was wonderful. But you live the principle, you speak the principle, you're experiencing. Since we're on her again, she came to our first seminar, she heard about it, and you tell them. Come on, you tell them.
Well, I was looking, really searching for a reason for life. So somebody told me, oh, there's an American coming to Lugano, and there will be a one-week seminar in the mountains in a monastery. Do you want to go? I don't know. America, and who is this guy? I was Catholic, and Catholic was that. That brings to heaven is Catholic, the Catholic. Well, that might be some sect or whatever that is. Said, no, he's a great philosopher. He's a philosopher. Go. Okay, something told me inside, go. So I went, and here, a big group of people standing there and waiting, and spies and lawyers and medical doctors and also proper intellectual people and
cults in the summertime.
Yeah, I really don't know where I'm here. And here comes Dr. Beiler, a pair of shorts and a t-shirt and some sandals, and goes around and hugs everybody. And I really don't know what a crazy group that is. That's really something strange. But something told me stay. So I'm sitting in this crowd and listen, and I say, what this guy says, it makes sense. That's really what I'm looking. He said, I'm God, God I am. This is strong because I was praying for God outside for years since a child. Here he comes and says, I am God, God I am. And then I said, well, really? Makes sense. If God is omniscient, omnipresent, omnipotent, and God is unlimited, I mean, the first time I hear something which makes really sense to me. So I continued listening to Dr. Beiler, and he said, well, this is a one-week seminar, and everybody stays in the monastery and sleeps in the monastery. That's how it was set up.
In a cell?
I'm sleeping in a cell in a monastery? No way! So I said to the lady, the organizer, I said, I can't stay. I went in that cell up there. I cannot stay there. That's impossible. Oh, you go home. You go home. I was the only one who could go home from this whole big group of people. And Herb said to me, you're coming tomorrow? I'm not sure. It's good, but I'm not sure if I come. So next morning, I was there again. And they had a ball. They were playing piano. They had a ball dancing. They had, and I missed it all because I went home. So we finished the seminar, and I, every evening, the only one who went home was me. And they gave me that permission. I don't know why, but it turned out that I'm still here, and I'm working on this, and I have gained a lot of spiritual awareness by staying. What I wanted to say is that sometimes we are fighting exactly that what we need to learn. Today I'm a monk, I'm living in a monastery. That's what I was fighting so much I'm promoting today. And I see how important it was for me and it is for me to just live within myself and not needing that God outside, but really concentrating on myself and knowing that I am God and I need to take responsibility of who I am by thinking the right thoughts and speaking the right words and living a beautiful, happy life.
Thank you, Ellen. It's real. It's real. These are things that happen. Now, that's her children we're talking about. And her children are very wonderful. And Diego, he came to visit us at the ranch, and he told us about his problems. And I said, Diego, are you doing what makes you happy? Yes. I said, well, then go for it. Diego, are you pleased with yourself and what you're doing? Yes. Then go for it. You are the only one who has to make yourself happy or sad. So go for it. Do what is right for you. And so he did. And he's doing it. Now, we don't say he and his wife are going to get back together. Maybe they've had their time together, their growth together, and they're ready to advance. Maybe she woke up, and maybe he woke up. And maybe they find that the both of them are ready now to look at each other with different eyes and look at life with different eyes, because they both know what their problems are, and they both know what their solutions are, and they both know that they're ready to enjoy the solutions. And if the solutions are togetherness, then that's fine. If the solutions are being separated, then that's fine. We are not the judges for it. We merely put the causes in motion. All is in divine order. All is in divine order. All is in divine order. And we get our big bloated nothingness out of the way of the divine circuits. Remember? Emerson said that. Get your bloated nothingness out of the way of the divine circuits. When you get your bloated nothingness out of the way of the divine circuits can do wonders for you. Now, what is your destiny? What is your reality? I'm home perfect. I'm home perfect. I'm home perfect. Is that your destiny in reality? Is that your destiny?
Yes.
No.
It's not. I'm home perfect.
That's right. You are whole and perfect. That's not your destiny. That's what you are. And you see, that's what we have to become aware of. There is no destiny. There is no fate. There is no to be. There only is. And when we train ourselves to realize there only is and is, then we don't look at it for tomorrow, because there's only today. We only look at it for the now, for that's only time there is. Now, Ellen does wonders. Ellen does wonders. We had a woman who was one of our students, Rosalie, in Switzerland, again. And she separated from her husband, Herbert. As she separated from her husband, Herbert, she says, I don't want your money. He's a very wealthy man. She says, I'm going to do what I'm doing on my own. I don't want any part of whatever, because he dumped her. And she says, if you don't want me, I don't want you. I'm going to do my own thing. So she went off, did her own thing. She was a cosmetician, and she ran a little cosmetic program, and a simple little thing, but apparently gave her enough money to live on. And her four children, instead of staying with Papa and being raised by Papa, which was the agreement, they came to live with her. So she had to make place for her, for them in her house. She had to feed them and take care of them and train them and counsel them. And, you know, that wasn't very nice. That wasn't very nice. You know why? Because I became the papa. Anytime there was a problem, they'd call me on the telephone from Switzerland. One of the children have problems, one of the others have a problem, and I would work with them. And the problems would all solve. I would work with them, all the solutions would be manifest, and they had a wonderful life. And to this day, they're doing just fine. Now, we had another student who didn't want to learn the computer. She didn't want to learn how to drive. She didn't want to learn to speak English. She didn't want to learn to sing. And so I'm a very patient person, and I said, Gertrude, if you could speak English, you could get so much more out of our program. So she took lessons in English, and she speaks beautiful English. I said, Gertrude, if you could learn to drive, you would find that taking the buses all the time and the other public transportation is a bummer, you know, compared to driving yourself. And so one of her daughter gave her a car. Her daughter is always traveling around the world, and wherever she goes, she amasses things, and then she says, oh, Mom, you take this, you know. And so her mother took the car, and it's just sitting there. So what's she going to do? So she took driver's lessons, fell in love with the driver training man, and she learned how to drive. Now she drives, she says, wow, how wonderful. And then she bought a new car.
And that was, she was more than 60 years old.
Oh yeah, she had already retired as a school teacher. She was over 60. And so then, she was at our seminars, she attends all of our seminars, and she's thinking, I like me. And you heard terrible, terrible, terrible singing. And I said, Gertrude, go take singing lessons. Oh, no, 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 no. So she took singing lessons. Well, what did she do? She went to an operatic star who was retired, who was giving singing lessons, one of the greatest divas, and she studied with her. And the lady says, you want to learn how to sing? My goodness, this is a challenge. And I will work with you for a couple of weeks, and if anything happens, then we'll continue. But no promises. Well, after a couple of weeks, she improved so tremendously by her desire to improve that today, well, let's not say this star, 6 months into her doing it, this is several years later, 6 months into her doing it, she tried out for, what is the name of that? It's the Swiss Gospel Choir. The Swiss Gospel Choir, and she's not into this gospel bit, but she wanted to sing. So she tried out for the Swiss Gospel Choir, who sings on television and radio and makes discs and stuff, and she was accepted. She was accepted, by gosh, you know. And she came to our seminar on campus, and I said, well, how's the singing coming, Gertrude? She says, oh, just wonderful. I said, well, would you like to favor us with a bit of what you've learned? Oh, yes. So she stood up there before us. Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la. 5 minutes. With such dignity, with such pride in what she had done, and so desirous of doing it perfectly, I said, wow. We all did. We had a table of about 15 people there, listening to her as she was singing. And we just were amazed and delighted for her. We were delighted that she took it seriously and she gained the gift. Now you see, she gained the gift. Now, she has made a mistake. And a mistake is maybe not a mistake. But her son has two children. And these two children are with her most of the time. Her son lives right here. You know, two houses away, and she lives right here, and the children come home to her because he's working and he's not married. He and his wife had separated and stuff, and so she's raising the kids pretty much. And occasionally he'll have a girlfriend in, and the girlfriend says, call me mama, and the kids don't like that too much. But anyhow, so I said, Gertrude, you are creating yourself raising those children. Gertrude, it is time for you now to be master of yourself, not to be raising someone else's children, no matter how much you love them, but it's letting their parents raise them or whatever the situation is. You do whatever you wish, but don't create them as your responsibility. Oh, no, I won't. I plan to do my own thing. I want to do my own thing. Well, they have their sport games. They have their this. They have their that. They have their hurts. And they need to have a live-in mother, you know, someone who's there as she feels. And so they're at her house a great deal. Now, she has chosen this. She has chosen to be a parent to children that are her son's children. And so she's chosen to do this. It's nobody else's fault. She has definitely chosen to do it. Now, these children are being treated, let's say, 2,000% better than she raised her own. She is giving them understanding and love and compassion that she never gave to her own children because, you know, when we raise our own children, we're always too busy. But when we raise grandchildren, we always got time. It's kind of nice. But she is having that beautiful miracle take place in her life. Okay? She's the creator of that. You're the creator of it, too. You're the creator of everything that comes into your life. This lady was telling me all about her wonderful daughters and how super they are and how glorious they're expressing themselves and how magically they're coming out of the area of not knowing who they are into the area of knowing who they are. And she made one statement there as she was talking about her daughter. She said, now, just believe in God, believe in God, believe in God. Mama, what do you mean? Well, believe in God. Well, Mama, God's in me. What do you mean by believe in God? As though it's something outside of me. She said, I'm sorry, sweetheart. You're right, you know. You see, we talk with our ancient language of yesterday. Oh, God, with our hands out, praying to a presence outside of ourselves. Which is there? But why go the long route? Go the short route. Go right within to the center where Jesus told us God is. You know, go right there to the center of our being. And listen. And listen. If we're going to go outside, we're foolish. If we're going to do the Rampha thing, we're not standing up for being who we are. Now, if this woman who wrote Rampha had written it in her own name, it may have never gotten published. It may have never gotten recognition. But who cares? Who was she doing this for? Was she doing this for the public, for others, or was she doing it for herself? We need to come to the realization we do everything for ourselves. Now, if that woman did it for herself, do you know what would happen to her? You know what would happen to her? She would be the next Mrs. Graham, Billy Graham. She would be leading in herself. She would be expressing in herself. She'd be doing the things that are important. Now, Ella and I have a great privilege that we have taken upon ourselves. And that privilege is to take a couple of nations and love them to pieces. A couple of nations and love them to pieces. How about that? Now, you see, if you had put 12 more chairs out here, we would have had 12 more people. So, we go to Africa. We go to Nigeria. And our students in Nigeria gather us everywhere. They drag us from place to place to place. And when I say drag, I mean drag. They drag us from place to place. They take us to one school, and we're speaking to maybe 50 to 100 students. We go out of that school and go into another school, there's 1,000 students. We go into another school, there's maybe 80 to 100 students. And it varies by the different schools. And the only children who are in these schools are the children of the politicians, the children of the well-to-do in Nigeria. And so we're in there, and we're teaching these children about this. I bless Nigeria, land that I love. I stand beside her and guide her through the night with the light from within. From the mountains to the valleys to the ocean white with foam, I bless Nigeria, my home sweet home. I bless Nigeria, my home sweet home. Now, they laugh. They said, you bless Nigeria? I said, no, you bless Nigeria. And we teach this to them. Ellen is standing up there sharing it with them. I'm standing up there singing with them. These people have in the almanac that their governments are corrupt. And we tell them, no, your government is whatever you see it as. And you are the tool to bless Nigeria and to see the government building beautiful roads for the people, building beautiful hospitals and schools for the people. You see the government offering the people opportunities to grow and expand in consciousness and having the greatest schools in the world. You see the people who run the government in Nigeria caring about Nigeria, not caring at all about their own pockets. They don't really care. They care. Our nation is the greatest, most wonderful nation in the world. And I say, Nigeria is the garden spot of the world. Now, the kids say, yeah. And they write this down in their books. And their parents, their teachers, write it down and put it on the blackboard so they can sing that song. And then we go into the different classrooms and we sing it with them. We have the whole group singing it out there. And they have a little Gestapo man out there in the middle of the group occasionally. You know, stand up, pay attention, you know, get the kids, come on, come on, come on, come on. And then pretty soon, that guy, in every group there's a guy like that, you know, a teacher who's the one who makes sure all the kids obey. And pretty soon he turns to us, and he looks at us, and he's not paying any attention to the kids anymore. He forgets his duty. He's having such a good time hearing what we have to say. And he joins in with us singing, and everybody joins in with us singing. And the whole nation learns this. And you know what they do? Us silly Americans, Europeans, and so on. They took the banner poster and put it over their streets, clear across the street, saying, "I am God, God I am. Dr. Barley and Dr. Ellen Jeremini from America coming to share. I am God, God I am." Across the middle of their streets. And all the people come to the seminars and they come to our talks and so forth. This is all without any money because there's no money exchange and so forth. And we teach them, "I like me. I like me, I like me, I like me." And you see the light go on in their eyes. You see the joy go on in their eyes. And you know, when you talk to those people about absolute, they understand. When you talk to those people about high technical intellectual subjects, they understand. And you think, surely in that country that has limited education, they don't understand this. All the people who come to our talks, they understand. And they follow it. And they believe it. And they practice it. One young boy, his name is Endless. Yes, she remembers. Endless Akakuga. And Endless is a young man of 28, beautiful body, beautiful mind, beautiful soul, beautiful being. He walks into a room, and Mama's standing here holding the baby, and the baby's going, "Yah!" And he says, "Give me the kid." And so he takes the kid in his arms, and the women always give it to him, and the baby instantly coos. He has a heart of gold. He has a heart of gold. And he is taking these courses. He is taking these lessons. He is 28 and an entrepreneur. By mind. Not by money, by something. By mind. He creates it and things just go. He has 18 computers. I mean, most of the people don't have anything at all. They have dirt floors and they have limited income and what have you. 18 computers. And what does he do? He loves kids, obviously. So he has a class for children. He just sent us a picture of him teaching a class of about 20 children, you know, little grunts, you know, from 8 to maybe 15 or something like that. And they're sitting around looking eagerly, eager to learn the computers. And he's training them all on computers. Now, he's doing this. Now, what he said, he wants to take our course, and he is taking it, so that he can develop an awareness of himself, and so he can be an instrument so that the children of his country, the children of Nigeria, can have a life that he feels is going to be exciting for them. And another thing, Phyllis told me confidentially that she had an offer to go to Hollywood, and that she's going to leave next week to go to Hollywood. And she's going to become an actress, you know, a new Vivian Leigh or something like that, you know. And so she's going to go and do that. Because, you see, better opportunities are out in Hollywood than there are here in St. Louis. And so she's going to go to Hollywood. Well, my friends who are in Africa, we say to them, "Would you like to come to Europe? Would you like to go to America?" "Oh, no, no. We'd like to visit. But this is our country. This is where my heart is. This is where my home is. This is where my life is. This is where I want to share who I am. This is where I am the allness that I am." Is that how you said it? Pretty much like that, yeah. This is where, she says, St. Louis is my place. She says, if the world calls, I will certainly travel and serve it, but this is where I want to be. If we are so concerned about otherness or outerness, we get ourselves in trouble. We taught the kids in Guyana, in Ghana, in Switzerland, Germany, in Italy, in France. We taught the kids in Canada, and we taught them in Australia. Oh, Australia. Okay, now here's another example for you. few years ago, Australia was having a recession in their market. And the money, the dollar was going down, 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 down. And the newspapers were saying, our government is terrible, our government is terrible, the money is going down. Our government is terrible, our government is terrible, the money is going down. Our government is terrible, our government is terrible, the money is going down. And the newspapers and the people kept saying that, and they kept saying that, and they kept saying that. And we went to the Theosophical Societies and the Science of Mind churches and to the Unity churches and to the Divine Science churches and all the places around there. And we spoke to them. And we said, hey, you're pushing yourself right out of the market. We have the finest government in the world here in Australia. Our dollar value is the highest in the world. We are the greatest country in the world. We are a super Australia. We are a super Australia. And starting with me, I have a good income. I have a good family. I have a good world. Everything is beautiful. And we spoke in Australia, how many weeks? Two weeks about, and went from all these different places and speaking. And as we were leaving Australia, the newspaper reported, the money market is going up. The politicians are doing just great. The lights are going dim. And we're having a fantastic time. You see, did we do that? Yes! If you don't believe in yourself and your treatment, then don't treat. If you believe in yourself and your treatment, make your treatment. Treatment happens only when you take the time to be consistent with it. Now, what is it that messes up a treatment? What word could we use that messes up a treatment?
Doubt.
Doubt. What is doubt?
Fear.
Hmm?
Fear.
Oh, no, that part's okay. Doubt, whether it's fear or not, doubt is another cause. It's a fearful cause, true, but it's another cause. But it's not a fearful cause. Why do you doubt? Because you think it's not going to work. You know, you think it's not going to work. You may fear that it's not going to work. That's a word that you could use there, too. But you think it's not going to work. It's another cause. Now, drive in town and get me a pack of cigarettes. But drive safely. Drive safely? Do I expect that you would ever drive unsafely? I surround you with the pure white light of love. Have a great trip. You know, have fun. Be yourself. Have fun. And she comes back from town. She says, they were out of cigarettes. They don't make them anymore. They decided that cigarettes are something that aren't needed by the world, and they're just not available anymore. You know, they're not available to anybody or any place. Oh, okay. Then I'll stop smoking. Yeah. Yeah. It's okay with me. Yeah, sure. But you see, most of us at one time in our life perhaps even smoked. You know. But the thing is, we don't need anything. We don't need anything in the outer. We have everything in the inner. Now, let me blow a little dust here. We have churches in New York. And these churches are seeking to have their congregations grow. And their churches of God Unlimited, their churches of positive thinking, their churches of metaphysics, their churches of all these good things. And so the ministers take these people from their Catholic background and from their other backgrounds, their Hindu backgrounds and so on. And so they want to keep them. So they have, before the service, the girls going through the church with their incense burners underneath the seats and stuff, you know, and all around the church. And I think to myself, what are they doing? You see, that's as much as smoking a cigarette. Incense burning is as much as smoking a cigarette. You are putting something contrary to the purity of your being into yourself. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't do it or should do it, but I'm just saying, hey, are you beautiful? Can you ever tell me you're not beautiful? If you ever tell me you're not beautiful, then you're not beautiful, right? Yeah, so you cannot say one minute, I breathe the pure, wonderful air. Here's a story. I've owned and published newspapers and magazines for 50 years, and I've been a photojournalist for many years, too. And I would go into fires, forest fires, in Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin. I had a newspaper there, and one of my jobs was to cover the news and so on. So I would go into this fire. I'd be wearing my jacket, my pipe and stuff, you know, and walking into this fire. And the fire would be burning, and the tree limbs would be falling down in the Wyalusing State Park in the forest where the fire was running. It's a terrible thing. And so here I'm taking my camera. I have my side camera there, you know, and taking pictures and walking deep into the forest and looking up at the fire, going here and there and taking pictures and just having a great time. And then I come out, and the firemen are taking off their fire masks, their gas masks, you know, there so they can breathe and so on. Well, where were you? What were you doing? Just taking some pictures. But you didn't have a mask on. You didn't have anything. Your coat. And you're not singed. You're not burned. Sorry, I didn't know that I was supposed to be, you know. And your breath, you know, you're breathing normally. Yeah, that's true. I didn't expect anything different. I didn't expect it. I went in as an innocent. I went in there to take pictures of the fire, not to be consumed by the fire. A stupid breath from their point of view. But Daniel in the lion's den, what did he do? He went in the lion's den not because it was his choice, but he went in there because it was his choice. He got put in there because he had himself in the consciousness that he would go there. He could have had himself in the consciousness of being invisible and not being seen, and somebody else chose him to go in there, you know. But he went in there. And what did he do? He says, "Hi, Pussycat, how you doing? You know? How you guys doing? We're hungry." "Yeah, I know you're hungry, but another Christian will be along shortly. But no, hey, you're okay. You're okay. You guys are good." And the lions came up and they laid their head on his lap and so forth, and he petted them, and they were friends. He did not conceive of himself as being consumed by the lions, you know? He only conceived of himself as being the purity of Christian love as he understood it. And so he was untouched. He was untouched. Why do people walk on fire and not be burned? Because they believe that the fire is what they believe it to be. The lions to Daniel were friends. They were not evil to him. The fire to people who walk on fire is cool, wet moss. They rename it, they reconsider it, they relive it. The forest fire to me was an outside activity going on in the world, and I was merely taking a picture of it. I was not touched by it. I was not in it. You see, this is how it goes. When I was in the Navy in the Second World War, we were on Saipan and Oneida and Kwajalein and all these other good islands, you know. And so I was an aircraft carrier. And I would drive the captain's jeep during different times and to take him around. And then after I'd leave him someplace, he'd say, "Come back and pick me up in a couple hours." So I'd tour the island. And then the jeep broke down. And so I took it into the repair depot. And they gave me the admiral's jeep to drive while the jeep was being repaired. So here I am now in the admiral's jeep, not just the captain's jeep, but the admiral's jeep. And so I'm driving around the island, and I'm out toward the peak of the island, and here is a lovely forest glade, you know, going out on this little peninsula. And I thought, hey, cool, nice. And so I took off my uniform, laid it in the jeep, and went walking out there. Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful singing my head off, you know. I got the sun in the morning and the moon at night, and just having a great time walking out to the tip and back, and just enjoying the freedom of being away from the war. And when I got back, there were a bunch of MPs standing around my jeep. And as they were standing around my jeep, I am just my skivvies, you know. And so I come up there and I take my uniform and put it back on, and they look at me and they say, "Are you crazy?" And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" "Well, every week we're taking 2-3 people out of that area who have been shot by snipers that are still there in the jungle that don't know the war is over. They don't know that they don't have to shoot anymore. But what did you do?" "I got the sun in the morning and the moon at night." I was such an idiot. And they don't shoot idiots. Here I was singing, saying, "Here I am, shoot me, you know, choose your target, it's all there, you know." And they didn't touch me. I was innocent. I was believing in myself. They were not in my consciousness. They were not in my world. They were not in the thoughts that I had about myself. Can you believe that? Can you do that? Do you ever do that? When I was at University of Chicago Theological Seminary, and one of the things that we had to do, we had to go into the different churches, you know, and we had to go and see the Catholic churches and the Protestant churches and the Buddhist churches and the Hindu churches and the Hebrew synagogues and stuff like that. Well, we had to go into the rough parts of town, which were kind of tough, and slum areas and so on. So here I am, all dressed up fancy in my going to meeting suit, you know, my Sunday suit, you know how young ministers are. And so I had three or four guys with me, and they said, "We don't want to go in there." Come on, what's wrong, you know? I mean, I am so naive that someone wants to hurt me that it's stupid, you know, and I like it that way. And so I walked in there, and these guys are whirling their knives around, you know, their, what do you call them, with the big stickers on it and what have you. And so I was walking in there, and they looked at us, and they were black and we were white. And so we were looking for this church. And so this one guy was very aggressive. "What you doing here, buddy? You know, what you doing here?" Just, you know, just trying to scare us, you know, just thinking, you know, we're a bunch of young punks, which we were. And so, well, we're supposed to go to the Church of the Redeemed Savior's Love, or something of that nature, you know. And so they said, "Oh, yes, Reverend Martha Barnes is the minister there. We're supposed to go, and she's invited us to attend her service." "Oh, okay, she's my mother. We'll show you where it is." You know, now, she's my mother. He was putting on a show with his friends. He probably had no more desire to be in that show than the man in the moon, but he was putting on that show because that was the role he was supposed to play. And when he had to say to us, "She's my mother," it gave him a different aspect to a role. It gave him the thumb. "Yes, this is my mother, and these people are coming in. They are people of quality. They are people who really care about this here. Maybe we ought to pick ourselves up." And they all put away their stickers, and they walked with us to the church. In fact, they went in the church with us. So his mother had an extra bunch of young people along, too. And we sat through the service, lovely. But you see, everybody else, my friends, they said, "Oh, let's stay out of here." And hey, why be frightened? There's nothing to be frightened of. Whatever we're frightened of is in our mind. Whatever we're frightened of is in our thinking. I'm using some old illustrations right now, but you haven't heard them. And I was on board our ship, our aircraft carrier, and I was the assistant navigator to the ship's direction and stuff. And, you know, there can only be so many people on duty at one time. And so those who were not on duty when we were having a strike would have to be out of the way. So my bunk was way down below, and I didn't want to be way down below while they're bombing our ship. I figured if they bomb our ship, I'd want to be able to get off, you know. And so not run up a staircase that was clogged with guys trying to get up. So I took a cot, and I put it down next to the 5-inch gun, which was adjacent on the side of the ship, and on the sunny side. And they had this big door open there, and they had the gun sticking out. And they were shooting at these kamikazes that were trying to jump down on our ship, and some did, and then push them off the deck and so forth. Well, as I was sitting there, there was action all the time. They had to wait for the new mosquitoes to come around again. And so I was lying on the cot and reading my Unity magazines and my other magazines and my books on philosophy, because I loved it so. And the guy said, "Barley, are you crazy?" I said, "What do you mean?" "Well, what are you doing with the cot up here, you know, right next to the 5-inch gun, right next to this port?" I said, "Well, if the ship is going to get hit and we're going to go down, I can just jump out there and you know, I'm okay." And they said, sure. "But you're right." "But you're right." And so, "Well, what are you reading?" And so then I'd start reading to them. And I'd read Charles Fillmore. I'd read Emily Cady. I'd read all these different authors that are there, you know, and people that were the founders of this. I didn't have Ernest Holmes. I didn't have the various Divine Science writers, but my mother had them all. But I didn't have them with me, so I read to them. And, hey, that's interesting stuff. And positive thinking. Then I'd read from the books on philosophy from Plato and Aristotle and Kant and a few of the others. Wow, that's interesting, you know? And so every time we would have this, I ended up not on duty. I ended up sitting next to the 5-inch gun with the team that was always there, and we had great conversations. But you see, live your philosophy. Live it. Now, I chose to serve in the war. I chose to be enlisting because I wanted to get in quickly, because it was in 1945 in March, and the war was over after that shortly, and I got in. But I did not choose to ever shoot a gun at anybody. I chose not to kill a person. I chose not to take another's life. I chose not to be endangering anybody, the enemy or us, you know, and I didn't. And that's my choice. But I did do what I felt I should do because our country was at war and I should be there. But I didn't have to participate in any of the warlike things. And our aircraft carrier was a baby aircraft carrier. It was one that would attract the enemy away from our mainline ships. And of course, we were bombed a lot. And we'd get bombed, and the kamikazes land on our deck, and our deck would start on fire, and we'd shove it off into the sea and so forth. And then the guy, oh, look at our ship now. I said, hey, I think it's wonderful. What? You know, you are crazy here. You know? I said, no. I said, now we go out of the war for 6 months, 6 weeks. We go back to Pearl Harbor while they put a new deck on the ship, and we don't have to be in the war for 6 weeks. Hey, we get a vacation, you know. How many guys get a vacation right in the middle of a war, you know? And it's wonderful. But you see, this is what consciousness does to us. When we create our world, when we are the master of our world, then we are the master of the experiences that we have. Now, are you the master of the experiences that you have? And when you have doubt, what happens? You put another cause in motion. We're going to be hit. No, we're not going to be hit. That's doubt. Nice doubt, huh? Okay. Now, I surround this ship with my pure white light of love. I surround this car with my pure white light of love. All its ways are peace. All its paths are pleasantness. Whenever I wear any clothing, my clothing is always perfect and proper. Whenever I am with people, I always say the perfect and proper thing to them. Not that I want their love of me. I say that which is beneficial and meaningful to somebody else. I don't say something to make you happy. I only say the truth about you. I only say the truth about you. You're fantastic. You're glorious. You're wonderful. You're super. Right, Francine?
Absolutely.
Absolutely? Yes. Yes. Oh, she got it. She got it. I believe she's got it. How wonderful. But you see, this is what it's all about. Instantaneously, what's your answer?
Yes.
Yes. Instantaneously, what's your answer? Yes. Always say yes. Always say yes. I'd like to go to bed with you. Yes. When? Oh, I have no idea. Maybe in a couple of lifetimes from now, but that's another discussion. At the moment, I have no desire for it, but yes, it'd be fine. You know? I say yes to you, but I am master of my time. I am master of my life. And, you know, don't laugh at this. I know it's okay. But the sale begins when the customer says no. If the customer says yes, the sale is over with, right? Yes. Then there's no more selling. But I want to. I already said yes. But when? I already said yes. What else do you want to know? When? Well, when I decide. I don't have to come to decisions like that right now. I said yes, you know. But, hey, you know, I'm dying. I'm going to be gone tomorrow. Well, that's too bad. Bless you. Bless you. I love you. I release you unto your highest good. Now, your home purpose, your home purpose, your home purpose, your home purpose. Then he won't die tomorrow. You might have to, hey, no. Why do people make silly remarks, make silly demands? Why do people expects us to do things that are silly for us to do. It's because they're under pressure. It's because they think that there is no tomorrow. Now, can you live as though there's no tomorrow? Can you live in the N-O-W? Can you live in the now? Can you live right now and believe that right now is the most wonderful thing in the world? When I take you in my arms and I hug you, are you thinking of, well, tomorrow he's going to be gone? Well, if that's true, I'm not doing a very good job of hugging, am I? The now is the only thing there is. The now is the only thing there is. And the now is the only thing that matters. Do you like yourself? When you can say, I like me, 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 then all of your life unfolds the magic that's in it. All of your life reveals the purity and the wholeness that's within it. Okay. Now, let's just take a point here. Let us say that we are experiencing an illness. Let's say if we have cancer. And only you know it. You may have told your counselor that you have cancer. You may have told someone else you have cancer, but you have cancer. And it's not nice. It's tough. You're feeling sorry about it. You're feeling sad about it. And the doctor has said, terminal. Excuse me. Terminal. You're welcome. Terminal. And so you say, terminal? Peace begins with me. Hey! Whoo! How wonderful! Send them to every government in the world, starting with us. Okay. It's terminal, you're told. And you believe it. And then you get ready to make your will out, you get ready to do all these things, and you prepare for death. Now, what if I said, hey, yesterday you had cancer, today, buck, it's gone. I've just taken it, thrown it out the window. Your body is whole and perfect. You are a young spring chicken. You are ready to go and hatch some eggs. You are fabulous, fabulous, fabulous. And you say, you're right, you're right. It is gone. I feel no whatever it was that was there. I'm fantastic. I'm glorious. I'm wonderful. Hey, yes, I'm a young spring chicken. Yes, I'm ready to go out and dance and have a great time. Are you? Are you? Okay. What happened to the cancer? It's as much there now as it was before, and it's as much not there now as it was before. It's all right up here in your thinking. Right up here in your mind. And because it's right up there in your mind, it is the easiest thing in the world to clean out. We take the thought, cancer, out, 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 damn spot. You know, out, out, out. No, no, no. No, no, no. We never empower the negative. We only empower the positive. We never empower the negative. We only empower the positive. I have cancer. Well, that's positive. You like it? No, of course not. Well, then why talk about it? Why empower it? You are a bad girl. 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 Do you know what she does? She does this and she does that. And she, do you know? And then everybody's thinking about, oh, she's a bad girl. Oh, my goodness, you know, what a bad girl. And then I say, not really, not really. I have taken the feathers from the feather pillow and spread them around. And some of you will go home believing she's a bad girl when she really wasn't. Gossip does terrible things. That's what our mind does. Our mind believes things that it shouldn't be believing. Now, she is a good girl. She is a super lady. She is a super fantastic lady. She is a lady who speaks her word and the earth trembles. She is a lady who thinks her thought and the world reforms to the magic of her thought. She is a lady who goes around in the world and she spreads her
pixie dust.
Her pixie dust on everybody. She spreads her pixie dust on everybody. And that pixie dust is love. It's peace. It's harmony. It's goodness. It's truth. It's joy. It's wholeness. It's wealth. It's relationships beyond imagination. But the others are feathers that are not so cool. The pixie dust is pretty wonderful. And you know, she doesn't have a feather in her being. She's not a featherhead at all. She only has pixie dust. She has a load of pixie dust. Her heart is just made of pixie dust. And she has a pixie dust factory right behind her heart that keeps producing more and more. And she goes spreading it out. And she spreads out this pixie dust and she says, you're holy perfect, you're fantastic, you're glorious, you're beautiful, you're independently wealthy, you have friends that are just flooding around you, making you feel, yes, yes, see, it's working already before we even did it. That's great, because you're perfect. See, you're fantastic. You see, as you begin claiming these things for yourself, then you begin experiencing them. And as you begin naming them, then you begin having them. But it's up to you. It's up to you to do it. Because if you don't do it, somebody else can. Now, is this a happy girl here? Mm-hmm. Ellen?
Yeah.
Have you talked to Cindy? Have you talked to Cindy?
No.
You will. Cindy is a very delightful lady. Cindy was thinking one day, oh, wouldn't it be fun to have a boat? And so, next thing you know, she has a 46-foot yacht in the Mississippi River out here, and she takes tours and seminars and things like that. And you see, it's just her choice. But before she had it, she hadn't even thought about it. But the moment she had it, she thought, now what am I going to do with this wonderful ship? What am I going to do with it? Am I going to take it to Hawaii or down to New Orleans? Or am I going to go up to Minneapolis? Or what am I going to do with it? And she says, I'm just going to enjoy it. Now, what is it that you're thinking about but you're not thinking about? What is it that you're dreaming about, but you're not dreaming about? What causes are you putting in motion for yourself that you haven't even realized you put in motion? I think you have one in your mind. What cause did you have in your mind that you're not even putting in motion? Yes? You're going to be an astronaut?
Why not?
Why not?
Good.
Why not? It's just like Sally was saying, what's the name of that state?
State of mind, what state?
The state of astronauts.
Oh, Kansas,
the state of astronauts, with its rolling hills and fields, and everywhere is an astronaut. Now, what state is this here? This is the, what kind of center? The soul. The soul esteem center. The soul esteem center. Now, I was going to keep this for much later, but I'll tell you now. The soul esteem center is the center of everything that is magnificent. Now, any person who walks in that front door who has not got an idea of what would make their heart fulfilled and their life complete will be empty. Any person who walks in that front door and doesn't believe that they're God, that they're fantastic, that they're glorious, that they're wonderful, will be empty. That is their gift. You won't have a thing to worry about. And every person who walks in that front door, knowing in their heart that they're divine, they're wonderful, they're beautiful, and whatever joy would come into their heart to make them even more wonderful, instantly it's done. Every person who comes in that door, regardless of who they are, it's even a friend.
Or that door.
That's right, too. That door, too. Yeah, that door leading to our great auditorium. Now, remember that. Remember that. Every person who enters here is illumined. Every person who enters here is uplifted. Every person who enters here is, and this is not a nice thing for me to say, every person who enters here is spiritually healed. Not a nice thing to say. Why is that not a nice thing to say? It's not a nice thing to say.
Because there's nothing to be healed.
Huh?
No, because there's nothing to be healed.
Yeah, that's right. There's nothing to heal. But the thing is, if you have something that you're complaining about and you are spiritually healed, you don't remember that you ever had a problem. The hospital doesn't remember that you had a problem. Your family doesn't remember you had a problem. And you have nothing to say, I used to have it, but I don't have it anymore. You know, this is what people want to say, don't they? Let me show you my scar here, you know. Let me show you my appendix, you know. And let me show you my new heart that they just put in here, you know. You see the new lungs and the new legs. Oh, boy, you know, really fantastic. Okay. So you had a spiritual healing. And your spiritual healing was a recognition that you never had a problem from which to be healed. Your life has always been absolute and perfect. From the time that you stepped forth on this planet Earth to the time that you stepped forth on this planet Earth, again and again and again, perhaps in other dimensions on this planet, perhaps in other dimensions off of this planet, whatever your choice, you will have spiritual healing. Now, if you have spiritual healing right now, which I'd like to have you enjoy, but if you have spiritual healing right now, you will always be independently wealthy. You will always have a perfect body, spirit, mind, and body. You will always have love overflowing, because you'll be love, unconditional love, no conditions to it. You will love everyone. You'll love the rattlesnake. You'll love the grass snake equally, because there is nothing not to love about them. You would love them because they were just doing their thing. Now, would you see a coyote catching a rabbit and having him for dinner? And you would say, oh, they shouldn't do that. They took my puppy and they ate him. They took my cat and they took the rabbit and they ate him. Hey, how many of you are vegetarians here? Not many. So you eat meat. Where do you think that meat comes from? Someone's got to die to give up that meat. That cow, that pig, that horse, that rabbit, that chicken, you know. And, sweetheart, the grain is a living essence. Everything is living. If you're a vegetarian because you delight in eating vegetable foods or vegetarian foods, super. If you're a vegetarian because you don't want to eat something that was alive, well, you're living under a false attitude. Because you know what you're doing? You're eating a lot of meat every time you open your mouth. You're breathing in those insects and those flies that are flying in. They're so tiny you can't even see them. Really? Yes, 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 yes. And you're eating them. No. You know? Just think, if you're riding on your motorcycle and you open your mouth, hi, Joe, what you doing? Hi, bud. And you're eating so many insects. And the insects are tiny. You know, this water, it's purified water. Put it under a microscope. Purified. And you'll see that it's got all sorts of wonderful living things in it, you know. It's not bad. It's just there. Now, if we are vegetarians because we don't want to eat a living thing, we're doing it for the wrong purpose. If we're vegetarian because we like vegetables to eat, super. If you are eating chickens because you don't like to eat red meat, super. Nothing wrong with red meat. Nothing wrong with chicken. Nothing wrong with anything. And when you have a spiritual healing, you don't even need it anymore. You don't need it. You live in your ideal spirit, mind, and body, which does not need food. You live in your ideal spirit, mind, and body, which does not need water. You live in your ideal spirit, mind, and body, which does not need anything. You live in a mental consciousness, and your body is the illusion in the outer, as it is right now, even though we don't want to believe it. So let us take charge of this outer illusion that we have, which is constantly changing, and let's bring it into line with its perfection. What is your archetypal human beingness? What is your archetypal body? What is your divine body? Do any of you have any idea, and do you care? Do you care what your archetypal body is? Do you care what your divine self is? No, you don't. Is your divine body a body that never wears out? Sounds good, doesn't it? Is your mind a mind that is always clear and crystal and sharp, absolutely aware of all the wisdom of the universe? Sounds nice, doesn't it? Can you tune into your computer and draw forth from your computer banks whatever information you choose to program yourself to know? Sure. You built it into the computers. You can build it in yourself. You've already got it built into yourself. You just have to know it. Okay, now, why don't you do that? Because, number one, you are lazy. You want to help other people. You want to help other people first, because then that doesn't make you look so bad. Now, when you start helping yourself first, what happens to all these other people who needed your help when you help yourself first? What's that? What's that?
They eventually get it.
When you help yourself first, you see with your eyes of purity and goodness everybody else already helped, if helped is the right word. They no longer need your help. They no longer want, they didn't want it in the first place. Now, your son is 2 years old, and he's learning how to walk and so forth. And so you have a string, a rope, from this side of the room to that side of the room, and you have a holster, a harness on him, and you have it hung on that rope. So he can walk along from this side of the room to that side of the room with this harness on. You know, it teaches him to walk quicker. And so then you take the harness off, boom, he collapses on the floor because he hasn't built the strength in his legs that he needed. You hurt him instead of helping him because you thought you were helping him because he wanted to stand up. He didn't want to stand up. He wanted to build his body in the most perfect way. Now, what could and should she have done as a mother that really cares? She should have said, my son lives in his ideal spirit, mind, and body. My son lives in his ideal spirit, mind, and body. My daughter lives in her ideal spirit, mind. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. And what will happen? What will happen? In no time at all, they'll be in their spirit, mind, and body. We talked about Irene last night, and Irene was dying of cancer in the hospital, and she changed her mind about it, and all of a sudden, she's fantastic. 6 weeks later, she was eating enough food, getting her body up. She got rid of the idea that she had cancer. She had the idea of misdiagnosis. And so, in 6 weeks, her frail body, which was in her 70s, all crumpled up and nothing, was strong. 6 months later, she was playing tennis again. Now, that can't happen when you have a mental concept that says you're sick, because you do not empower your body to take the energies that you give it to rebuild your body. Is there anything that you can't do? Remember we talked about Carillion photography, you're all familiar with that, where they take an energy picture of your body, and if there's a missing finger, the finger is there on the energy picture, because the energy picture of your body is always there. The world is pure energy. The world is total energy, and the world is ready for lunch, isn't it? So, let's prepare ourselves for lunch, and when we come back, we will continue. I think we go on to 5, right? Okay, so what time would you like to have them back?
I think we said on the flyer,
what's that?
2 o'clock. I think we said on the flyer 2 o'clock.
They said on the flyer 2 o'clock. So, please.
It's up to you.
Oh, 2 o'clock's fine. Let's get back here at 2 o'clock, and we'll continue with more illustrations for you and more evidence, and we'll talk more about spiritual healing and how it is really a rough way to go, but exciting. And also, if you have any questions at all, write them down and give them to me, and we will field them and see what we can come up with for you. Okay?
Yeah, would anybody like to go off to Cyborgs to eat with us?